Hello, friends, and welcome to another episode of Just Another Kill Team Podcast, connecting Kill Team communities across the globe. Your hosts today are me, I'm Jason.
And I'm Travis, regular co-hosts.
We connect with all sorts of different people, TOs, competitive players, and just anyone else that has something interesting to say that they message us and convince us to talk about on an episode.
Yeah, we do like making the world a little bit smaller, one hobbyist at a time.
We do have a Discord and a Patreon, which is definitely some stuff that you should check out if you enjoy our content.
And if you do enjoy this podcast, make sure to share it with your friends who play Kill Team, because the more, the merrier.
In today's episode, we interview my friend Ted from the local Minnesota scene, talking about his fresh take on Hyrotech Circle, mainly with the Psychomancer.
Nice to make your acquaintance, Ted.
Yeah, nice to meet you, Rose.
The Psychomancer himself.
Psychometa Minnesota.
My tournament win rate on the Psychomancer is not as good as the Chronomancer, but I've only played two tournament games with the Chronomancer.
So what's your tournament win rate with the Chronomancer versus the Psychomancer?
100% win rate on Chrono, but that's out of only two games. Psychomancer's at 80% win rate. And that's all good. That's all of my other tournament games.
What is that like? It's got to be like in the a dozen or more? 30? I don't know.
Either way, that's pretty solid.
Probably something like 15 games or something like that. 18.
And these are all at, anyways, you know, smaller tournaments or local tournaments?
Yeah, I mean, the largest tournament I've been able to play in was the Renegade. I really wanted to do
Adepticon,
but it was my kid's second birthday that weekend.
Definitely not one of those times to go then. Fair enough.
My wife is like, oh, you could go. I'm like, no, you say that 2 months ahead of time, and then we're going to get to the weekend of, and you'd be like, no, you're not going anywhere.
All right, so, you know, for anyone who's listening, this is Ted, a local Psychomancer extraordinaire, because there's literally nothing we like doing more on this podcast than talking about Phobos and Hyrotech Circle.
I thought you were going to say Hyrotech Circle, and I was like, hold on. Phobos. Legionaries are pretty up there, too, but they've taken a little bit of a back seat lately.
They have. Just because, like, you know, the new hotness is Night Lords, and I'm sure we'll get around to talking about Night Lords soon enough, but listeners just heard that last podcast, so now we're back to talking about the other top king of the meta, which is Hyrotech Circle.
S-tier.
And instead of talking about the same thing that everyone else wants to talk about, we're talking about the Psychomancer with Ted here.
So fresh.
Ted, you've been crushing the Midwest locally. You know, funny little anecdote. In our Discord, you mentioned that, like, you and Shane had done well with them, and then Shane on the side messaged me like, who's Ted? I was like, well, Ted locally, he's a big deal locally.
I'm a large fish in a moderate sized pond that has not jumped into the ocean yet.
Yeah, I think it was just cute because Shane was like, I have never heard of a Psychomancer player before. I was like, oh, don't worry, Shane, he's a big deal locally, and, you know, big part of the Midwest, at least in Jason's community, right?
I went undefeated at the Paul Bunyork World Championship Invitational, the second one, which was a 3-round 8-person tournament.
And this is pre-buff?
No, that one was actually last weekend.
Oh, okay, so, all right. So the new Psychomancer,
Psychomancer with the APL and injure is really mean. I actually was able to drop that at like a fusion pistol Harlequin and just be like, yeah, you get to sit there and not do anything.
I guess, you know, for listeners who don't know, you want to talk through from top to bottom what the Psychomancer does on all of its abilities and kind of talk about how you find uses for each one. Because I'm sure most players haven't really played against Hyrotech Circle, and they know of, you know, at this point, the cheese from Chronomancer. You know, you'll walk up, drop a bubble of counter temporal nanomine, slow people down, and then just nuke someone else by letting your Despotec or something else run up the board. But the Psychomancer is an untapped vein. You know, we've talked a little bit about the Technomancer on the podcast, but Psychomancer we haven't really talked much about, maybe because we've been planning to have you on at some point or another, or at least Jason's been in the background scheming for this podcast.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Ted's been crushing people with the Psychomancer for a long time, like even before like Hyrotech were quote unquote good. He's just like rolling around, just like alpha bombing everybody and giving people the hotness.
The Psychomancer's gun is one that you go through the stats of, and people just look at you like, what insanity is this, until you get to the damage profile. Because it's like the Chronomancer's Aeon Stave, the Abyssal Staff. It's 5 attacks on 3s, 2/2, which the damage profile, you're like, okay, it's a flamer, but then it's Blast, Splash 1, and AP 2. So it's very reliably putting damage on pretty much anything that doesn't have a solid invuln save.
Yeah. That, what does it end up like, 4 to 8 damage on like pretty much mostly anything?
Pretty much anything. Yeah. I dumped 7 damage into Custodes last week with it. And it was just like, well, you have one save to stop this, but that's 4 hits and a crit after going through Arcane Conduit for that cult ambush reroll. Which is, and the Apprentic being that APL 3, so you can actually get the arc through a lot easier with good positioning, has really been nice. But the gun is solid. It's if it rolls hot and you get a couple extra crits in there, even like intercessors start to get concerned about getting hit by that. I've had a couple times where I've hit a couple legionaries or a couple intercessors, and they take like 8 or 9 wounds, and the Astartes players are sitting there like, what did you just do to me with like a 2/2 blast weapon?
Other, you know, it goes without saying that on In the Dark specifically, the 5 attacks on 3s, 2/2, splash 1 profile is going to do a lot more heavy lifting, because it's going to do way more crits, which incur more attrition damage across the board.
Yeah, the lethal 5-up helps that a lot. My problem with Into the Dark on it is it's much more difficult to get the reroll from your Arcane Conduit, because it's so hard to draw visibility between the Apprentic and the Cryptic after like round turning point 1. You can usually line up some cheeky shots like TP1 that they can kind of shoot across your deployment zone, but then you need to get those models up into the field and doing stuff.
Yeah, okay. So the gun is a great piece of chip damage against pretty much all the teams, really threatening anyone that clumps up. And against the bigger guys, you know, you've got the toughness to take a couple shots back. So even if you're just doing a little bit of chip, if you pull an intercessor out into the open for them to take a shot, that's actually not the worst deal, because you've got 13 wounds and you can get up once. And nowadays with 2-up res, it's basically get up for sure compared to before.
Oh, man, I'm so torn on the 2-up. Like, it's obviously very good for my team. Right, and I've been playing Heretic exclusively competitively since I started rolling. Other than like the narrative event at Renegade, I played Blooded, and then had a bunch of guys like blown out into space. But yeah, other than that, just Heretic. But like even without the 5-up feel no pain, 13 wounds with a 3-up save and a 4-up invuln is pretty beefy. That takes a lot of hits. A lot of people also forget that Heretic have a tac ploy that they can bodyguard with any other model in the team within 2. So unless it's a blast weapon, like I've had a couple times where someone's like, I'm going to put my, it's like nearly end of the turning point, I'm going to have my plasma gunner and my like Kasserkin team or my Vetguard team pop out, and I'm going to plasma gun your leader. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to have this Mook Immortal take that shot and just die for me. And then stand up later. But it's, you know, especially when you're like, oh, you dropped Robin Ransack, I know you're going for Headhunter, so I'm just going to completely deny you that shot. And since it's a tactical ploy, it's kind of in your back pocket that they don't always think about it. Where if, you know, you're like, oh, that guy has a like a bodyguard ability in some other teams, it's a little more like they see it a little more coming. I found the other abilities on the Psychomancer, though. You get Conjure Trauma, which is the one that you just point at someone visible. It's not line of sight. Like, you just need to see like a clip of a cape out sticking outside behind heavy cover, and you can just drop injury on somebody. So just makes them injured no matter what. No injury rules. That, you know, you get this like revolving door of, oh, it can't be injured. Now you can be injured even though you're not immune to injured, that every GW game eventually gets. And then they just added that on you roll a die, and if you roll over their APL value, they take an APL debuff. And that has a lot of potential, that if you can get any line on like a key model of theirs, especially if it's something that has to be close in. A melta gunner,
really does.
Fusion pistol, a grenade. You can just say no. Like, yeah, you're useless for a turning point.
That's like my whole plan with scouts. I've noodled around with scouts a little bit. It's just like on turn one, give the key thing minus one APL, and it gives you like a whole turn of fearlessness if you use it right. So like the same concept of like using that to like conjure trauma on someone. I mean, I'm like, coming from an Alpha Strike perspective, I'm like, just yeet them out there, blast somebody, conjure trauma on like somebody else so they can't like strike you back that well, and just like go nuts.
Or even like if you can get a really nice turning point two is more likely, but you know, you steal an APL from someone else, so you got your 4.5 APL turbo turn. You know, fly up on a vantage, blast somebody, traumatize someone else, and then dash off behind heavy cover if you're on Octarius or something, and just be like, yep, that's nice. Now you have to like run around the entire board to get a beat on me. Yeah, the cryptex are all super rude. The other abilities, yeah, conjure trauma is often really nice. I usually primarily use that against shooting teams, or like elite hordes. I hit a Custodes with that the other day, and they were so sad. Like, my Custodes is actually injured. Like, yep, you can just sit there with your sword and your shield and can't get to anything. And you hit on threes now. Ooh, scary.
Direct nerds. Going from twos to threes, honestly, is like the biggest scale change in the game.
It's a bad jump. The other main one that I like to use against melee hordes, anyone that's going to be coming into melee with you and on Into the Dark, is Nightmare Shroud. And Nightmare Shroud is a 6-inch bubble around the caster, and it's usually something I use it on the Cryptic, but I run it on the Apprentic pretty often as well, because the Apprentic, I don't care if I just bomb them into the middle of the enemy line and pop this 6-inch bubble around a 32mm base, which is even bigger than, say, like, your... what is this...
It's a substantial area. 6 inches around a 32mm base is getting to the position of like 40k objective markers, which, you know, for kill team players who've looked over at 40k boards or Age of Sigmar boards, they've got much really big pieces of terrain covered up by these objective markers, and that's why the counter temporal nanomine was so abusive, because it was a six inch bubble, which is effectively, you know, 12 inches in diameter, which is just massive. So Nightmare Shroud is something very similar. Turns off rerolls for attack dice, which, and you cannot retain crits at all.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like a flat out, you know, your shooting attacks and melee attacks are that much worse. And considering that some of these newer teams that we've talked about, the Night Lords and the Exaction Squad, part of the reason why the teams are Exaction Squad is playable at all is because it turns off rerolls. Nightmare Shroud on an Apprentic, they can still be the originating point for your Cryptex magnification conduit, which allows you to shoot through it. It means that you can cover this huge area where your opponent is now just suffering. Which, yeah, I guess is kind of the whole goal for a Psychomancer, right?
Yeah, it's about you having a mental breakdown and me studying you while you know, completely come to terms with your mortality. But yeah, Nightmare Shroud is really, really solid against any melee team, especially, I actually really like it against the Eldar teams, because Eldar just love dumping a pile of crits on you. And if you can turn that off, all of a sudden, all those shuriken weapons, all of their, like, power swords that they have everywhere, just stop. You need three hits on a normal immortal to kill them with a power weapon if it's not critting. And so if you turn off that lethal five up for those six damage crits, they get a real hard time actually pumping that through.
Yeah, it's like tilting shields times 10. Like, people honestly do not like realize, like, everyone takes it for granted how big of, like, I mean, no one understands how much, like, turning off crits is, like, actually pretty enormous. Or, like, that really, really can swing a whole turn very dramatically.
Yeah, and or even, like, just, like, a Meltagun. Oh, hey, you can't drop mortal wounds into me. I can block anything you shoot at me. Granted, I only get my, you know, one save, but if it's on the psycho, you got your four invuln save, they can't crit anymore. Your AP2 doesn't matter. So you're basically just like, okay, yeah, bring your Meltagun in. I'm probably just going to live. And then heal, and then, you know, annihilate your Meltagun. One of my one of my favorite moments with that is on Into the Dark, you can set up positions where you get like a barricade where they have to be within 6 inches of you to attack you, right? And so I had like a Doom Bolter Sergeant, Intercessor Sergeant move in. I'm like, okay, you can come into this room and shoot this guy. There is no way for you to mathematically be more than 6 inches away from me. So I see you have Tactical Blocker in and your Lethal 5-Up Turbo Bolt Gun. Okay. Yep, you don't get P1 doing, you know, you're doing 4 damage a hit, so that's going to mess up a bit, but I think Nightmare Shroud is the kind of the sleeper of the team, though. Because right. Everyone looks at Harbinger of Despair, which is the third ability, and Harbinger of Despair is, again, a visibility pointed a spot on the map, and your opponent counts as 1 APL less for contesting, and takes an extra APL for any mission actions. That one I like into any team that doesn't have 3 APL base. Because you can put that on, like, not their home objectives necessarily, but like the closer ones on their side. And you can point to that and say, hey, you got to use your comms guy to not go 4-2 this round. Because like if it's on open, I'm dropping a death mark on one of your other closer objectives. Then I'm going to drop this on one of your three. So I'm going to steal one of your three, lock down another one, and then two. I've pretty often with the Psychomancer, I'll go 4-1 on primaries, especially on like loot or secure turning point one.
All right, and that's just because a lot of teams are set up to do just a normal move and then an action to go pick up the point. So if you're able to do Harbinger of Despair, it turns off basically not the easy ones, but the secondary ones, or even the far midboard ones. It just turns those off from your opponent being able to score them. So, you know, we've talked through all three of your abilities. You've got Conjure Trauma, which injures people. We've got Nightmare Shroud, which is a defensive bubble, effectively. And then Harbinger of Despair to mess around with people's scoring. Which combination of the three do you end up taking more often than not? Because there's got to be one that's kind of an all-star. Or maybe, you know, it's like, you know, you take the two based on the matchup and the map every time. And, you know, there's no real hard and fast rules. But I expect with such an off meta pick, there's probably something that you've fallen back to as a kind of like a safe option.
I think Conjure Trauma is the one I take nearly every mission. It's pretty rare for me. I think the only time I might not have taken Conjure Trauma was against Chaos Cults. Because Nightmare Shroud is really great into them. You turn off all their relentless rerolls and stuff. And, you know, that's a 2 APL team. So you can just pop their near points and with a Harbinger of Despair and shut off their scoring. Or even with that, like if they get one devotee on a point, you can just run one immortal up and win it. So you can use that with positioning and if the last time I played against cults was on a diagonal map, so like I feel like diagonal maps on Octarius don't really count.
Okay.
Against a horde team with a flying model with a blast like that, it's just like not fair for them, because they're like, all right, I got 15 dudes to put behind this triangle with like two pieces of terrain.
Yeah, depending on how people develop their diagonal boards, you know, if there's only two pieces of terrain on the line, then with those 15 models, you're either spreading out, which you probably should do, or you get blasted.
Yeah.
Either way, you're going to eat an Alpha Strike.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I'd rather eat an Alpha Strike on, like, two dorks that I don't care about that are, like, in the open versus six dudes that die.
Yeah, that's honestly, like, such an important point that, like, no one's talking about, where it's, like, if you know you're living an Alpha Strike game, just choose somebody for your opponent to hit. It's just, like, here's a goon unengaged standing, like, on the corner with no cover, just, like, doing whatever. And then there's going to be a lot of, like, telegraphed pressure elsewhere. And then people can either, like, engage your goon and suffer later or not and also suffer later. And, like, that's a totally valid thing.
Right. And I think there's this thing with a lot of, especially newer Horde players. I mean, we, in the Twin Cities, I feel like we don't have, like, a dedicated, regular, like, really solid vet guard player Well, we have a couple people that are solid with Blooded. But, like, we don't have anyone that's really, like, tuning us up with huge Horde teams right now. And so most of the folks that I run into, like, they are like, oh, my Horde team all has to hide and cover, and I'm going to get everyone in there. And then, you know, you just clip one edge of an engaged base on, like, a plasma gunner or something like that with, like, a move dash shoot, and, like, half the team is gone. Or if not gone, they're just so messed up, it doesn't matter. And yeah, it's almost like
a tip for new players. Like, you know, if you know that your opponent is going to do something, then just take it in the most advantageous way possible instead of taking it in the worst way possible. It might not be the easiest thing to see, but know that if your opponent has these big blast threats that they're angling to fly up to the midboard to nuke you, they are going to do it, you know, depending on whether it's going to be a Legionary with a Fire Blast or a Psychomancer with 4 APL and a blast weapon. Make sure that you are taking and making your opponent shoot the things that you want to shoot rather than just losing on the spot.
Yeah, using your obscuring is super important there too. Making sure that, like, hey, you can get those lines off. The other one, like Nightmare Shroud versus Harbinger of Despair, really depends on the matchup. Conjure Trauma is, like, as always take, because, like I said, you can just, like, even if you're pointing at a sniper, turning a if they get a sniper up on a vantage point, they're like, all right, I got my cover and my camo cloak and my silent 2+ mortal wounds 3 sniper rifle. Just hitting them up to injured and making them hit on threes can actually be pretty helpful.
Vet guard sniper with take aim is much less threatening when it can actually miss, because four dice on twos versus four dice on threes, you know, even with reroll ones, there's at least now there's a fail case.
The Unholy Shooting team, I think I've got the most games into is Casterkin, and they have pretty much the same sniper, except they can just say that's a crit. So it's almost even worse. I've had a couple times where it's like, oh yeah, so there's like three crits coming in, that's 9 more wounds. Like,
And that's where you would wish that you had a Nightmare Shroud going, but if it's a sniper on their deployment zone, there's just no room for you to get that Nightmare Shroud in place.
Yeah. I will say one thing, if you have a silent gun, like a powerful silent weapon, that is like one thing that Hero Tech I find for players that are trying to figure out, okay, this is the new, like, the Boogeyman team, they got buffed, they just won Adepticon. Bring a sniper like that. Hero Tech has terrible tech against something in conceal on a vantage point. Our normal way of getting rid of conceal is getting on a vantage point as well. So if you're up there, I'm probably not going to be charging you with my 3 flying models, because they're either shrimp or they're my leader. I would argue for its points value, Hero Tech has the worst grenade for the EP you pay for it in the game.
Especially compared to, like, your regular shooting profile, where, like, everything is crack grenades, and then what is it? It's 3-4 blast, nothing else special.
It's not even, it's 3-4 lethal 5. It's not even blast, it's a 3 EP.
The single target scarab that goes to hit the opponent in the face.
Yeah, and thematically, it's very cool. Because it's a nano scarab. Devour swarm, whatever, where you just, like, throw a cloud of bugs that just eat you into dust. Very cool thematically. I feel like that should be like a melta bomb, honestly.
I think it needs is torrent. So then you're actually, like, sending a cloud out that could hit multiple people. It's not getting blast, so it's not, like, completely, like, plasma grenading everyone
for,
up.
For 3 EP in the context of Necrons, it should be exactly what it is, but also blast and also AP1. I said it.
I accept these terms.
They got all the buffs they need, but, like, that's what I would do. Just for
let's not get ahead of ourselves and buff the one of the better teams in the format now.
It's nothing about the buffs, it's just for the vibes.
Yeah. So either way. Once you get a sniper up in that vantage point, so many of those snipers have, like, a camo cloak. So if I'm only hitting a few times, you're just blocking 2 with cover. It is the snipers, the Kastrakhan sniper, the Pathfinder sniper, anything that can just sit up high with a silent weapon in cover is a huge issue. I can't roller skates, or I can't just, you know, APL 3 charge up a Despotec into you, especially not without the rocket.
You know, this is where the Chronomancer's Chrononometron would come in play, right? Because you would get the extra movement so you can make a charge move and go dunk on it, go dunk a dork in cover. So when you're playing against these teams with the Psychomancer, you know, you've mentioned that there's a little bit of a downside when dealing with indirect. So how have you been approaching these problems? Are you playing the points more often? Are you lining up to angle a guy around the other edge? Or are you just basically ignoring them and just taking the shot and using your reanimation and your higher saves and your high wound counts to basically just tank through the damage?
Yeah, usually what I do in those cases, I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to eat those sniper shots. I'll try to set out something, like we said, counterplaying the blast. I'm going to try to set out something that's going to be less important in the long run.
You want your opponent to keep shooting at you and have them not move, because if the sniper is just standing there and you deal with everything else, it's just a dude on top of a building shooting your guys, which is fine ultimately, because kill team is a game about points. Like, you can kill as many things as you want, but if you're not killing the right things while they're scoring points away from you, it doesn't really matter. So like, while snipers can be annoying, if you are finding ways to grab points away from your opponent, that's probably just as fine. So, I know when Shane was on here, he talked about how his plasma sights have done a little bit of shooting. Have you found certain pieces pulling a little bit more weight with the Psychomancer? Are you using Immortals with the phase blades to go get some melee attacks in that you wouldn't expect otherwise?
I have had my Immortals, and I almost exclusively just take like 3 hyper phase blades and the phase shifter. Unless they just don't have an AP gun, then I might take the phase oculars and switch those out on the death mark to get more crits with that. So since Immortals punch, they have space marine fists, right? The 3-4-4 attacks hit on threes, which is like the most solid average middle line. They're amazing into horde teams. I'll often, if I'm able to pop up the +2 move march ability and just charge in and start just like haymakering Vetguard, they do work. You get lethal 5 up, you just need one hit or like a crit and a hit or two, and you'll just like wreck some mans.
Yeah, the lethal 5 makes them like very, very reliable into stuff like Vetguard, which is like kind of like an undersold statement.
Yeah, if you could put in it, and like vet guards are usually going to have enough folks that it's going to be difficult to do this, but like maybe against blooded, if you can get a lineup where you can charge two of their moop dudes and just eviscerate one, and you can just stand at the other, because you know you're a 10 wound operative with 4 attacks and melee, unless they're a dedicated melee operative, just random guardsman Steve is never going to punch his way through you. They have to disengage and they have to lose that activation. I actually did have one hero game with like one immortal killed 3 vet guard in melee in 2 turns.
Right. Because one of them decided to start a fight with you to do chip damage for the other and you killed him in response.
One of that was that I actually got a charge off on my opponent's demo guy. Like trapped him in melee. It was like a loot, so I like looted the point, and then I just charged the demo guy. I'm like, okay, you're not going to bomb anyone with this. And then he charged in the confident, and I think the hardened veteran, and just like Ginsu diced them all, healed up in between a couple.
And you know, one of the funner things is that your Psychomancer can command one of your immortals that is in melee to do a fight, because you're allowed a fight, an overwatch, a pickup, or an mission action. So having an immortal that gets charged, your opponent's like, whatever. Like they write them off, right? Because they're like, I'm not going to kill you. You're not going to kill me. But if your immortal fights, does a little bit of damage, then your Cryptek can basically tell him afterwards to finish the job. And he will probably finish the job most of the time.
One of the challenges that I found is any like other elite class melee is just going to wipe the floor with you. You know, like as soon as legionaries' lines start hitting your lines, it's just a terrible day to be a Necron. You're never killing the anointed if he gets into you. Which I mean
the goal would be to get killed, do one hit back, res, and then shoot him in the face.
Hopefully, yeah. I need to replay Nurgle Legionary, one of our local. You've talked about Jamie a little bit, right, Jason?
Yeah.
On the cast, yeah, like Jamie is a really solid player, and every time I've faced his Nurgle Legionary, he's absolutely just like mopped the floor with me. And a lot of that is like I was kind of a Tesla believer for a long time, or a Gauss believer for a long time. So they hit me these 4 or 5 AP 1 guns. He's like, all right, just like auto, like save 2 and then just dunk all the damage.
Yeah, Nurgle Legionary, surprisingly tough against shooting. So finding ways to crack armor is really, really important. And obviously, back when you were doing this testing, I suspect you were on a 3-up res roll compared to nowadays, which is a 2-up res roll. And that is a big difference, because now you can really like take a line of hits, get put down, and then res immediately after. Yeah. And that can be make or break. Granted, you can't have your opponent's Nurgle lines in your lines, die, get back up, because one of your dudes is not going to be able to take the following Marines charge, fight, kill, shoot someone else. Like, that's not really a thing that you can do. So you do need to do a good job on the as they're coming in to kill one or two of those legionaries before they make it into melee.
Yeah, that's very important. Also, I do need to try that matchup with Tesla, since they're grotesque, whatever. I forget the names of all the nasty Nurgle things, but they have that
mutagenic flesh. Basically, -1 damage against normal damage to a minimum of 3. So if you're taking Gauss, which is 4 dice on 3s, 4-5, it's 4 dice on 3s, 3-5, versus 5 dice on 3s, 3-3, splash 1.
Yeah, and the Tesla is really solid. It's also really good. It's great into like Siege Legionary or Harlequins.
So this is a case of you adjusting to your opponent by adding more dice, because you know that against Nurgle Legionary, you're going to get probably 2 saves, a normal save and a crit save, which means that your 5 dice or 4 dice on 3s, 3-5 profile is probably going to be doing 3-6 damage on average, versus the 5 dice on 3s chance of doing some amount of crit splash damage and also overwhelming your opponent's save. Like, they could save 3, but then they've taken hopefully 1 crit and they've taken 1 hit, which is 4 damage, which is not bad.
Yeah,
and so if they bring them down, you know, roll unlucky, which is often a thing that happens, you know, they will make 1 or 2 saves, then you're forcing through, you know, 2 to 3 hits, which can be maybe a little bit more damage, maybe not that much more, but you're just, it's an adaptation for the matchup that you've seen.
Yeah, definitely something I've rolled around with. The other thing, though, since Legionary are so good at just uppercutting other elites, Necrons are diet elite, is kind of what I call them, because they're a 6 model team, and they got like the Immortals punch like baseline Space Marines, but like that's as hard as they hit. They don't have anything harder than 3-4 in melee.
Necrons are, you know, definitely not a melee team. When your best profile is 4 dice on 3s, 3-4 with lethal 5. That's 4 your dice best. On twos. Yeah, 4 dice on 2s, 3-4, lethal 5. That's your best profile. That's not where you want to be in melee. Like, you are definitely a shooting first team that happens to have an elite number of aggro pieces and then 2 dorks to kind of help you score points and cover the rest of your holes.
And the tech, yeah. The tech on the... I remember when they added the free... They made the actions on the shrimp free. And the plasma sites, because it used to be basically a normal comms where you could pass, but it was a point to action. And the medic used to be you could res, but it was an AP to res. And when they opened that up, it was just like the skies parted and the sun shone down. And like, I can actually score points on loot now and maybe kill some things. But the thing that Legionary have and other really heavy hitting, I'm sure, like, we haven't played the matchup, Jason, but I'm sure your all Assault Intercessor team would probably kind of do this too. If you can get double kills on Necrons, and Legionary are really good at that, you know, you get your Malefic Blade, Meltagunner or something like that coming in, pop 2 Immortals in 1 activation, or the leader comes in and pops 2 Immortals in 1 activation. The res can't keep up, because you can only res at max 2 guys a turn. Unless you're playing Techno, which I'm not here to talk about. Because 50mm base is awful.
Oh, yeah, he is a big chonky boy.
Okay.
you know, as far as talking about overall game plans, you know, you've talked about how you chip away at your opponent's lines with these extra hyperphase blades on your immortals. Where do you fall as far as the TACOP selection? I know that on this podcast, over time, we've gone from recon lets you be a shooting team that scores actively to coming all the way back around now to saying security is actually where it's at. You don't need to score on turn one if you score all of your points on turn four. Where is the Psychomancer in the meta right now?
I've been running a slightly different build than I mean, I listened to the last podcast that Shane was on and listened to Command Point also. So I've heard a lot of what he's had to say on it. I run a little bit differently but I do still run security. When I first started, I ran security because I'm like, oh, I just need to stand there to do the points. And then I've heard like, oh, recon's the really good one. I'll try that out. Having such a limited number of actions makes having to go a specific place and being so limited in movement outside of a couple options. I mean, Apprentech is just a space marine now. Cryptech has three actions, but you need your shrimp to be around either scoring primaries or supporting your immortals and your Cryptech. So they can't just go like gallivanting off. If I'm against a team that I out activate, I might take recon and take recover item and like secure vantage, because usually they can't outmaneuver you to get those. Especially if you just teleport a death mark down onto the recover item. But I usually take central control, courier, and unyielding ancients. Because that just gives you, like, at the end of the game, you just got to have your Cryptech fly over to their deployment area. Put courier on that, I usually put courier on the accelerator plasma site because I can keep it safer. It doesn't have to be running around shooting stuff and doing work. So end of game, I can just like zip over maybe down to one of their objectives and move dash it across like 9 inches across the entire board and get those 2 points on that at the end of the game. It doesn't.
You mean escort operative, not courier, right?
Yes.
I don't know. That sounds like cheating right now. If you could take courier along with the security stuff.
No.
But yes, there is escort operative. Escort operative is you declare an operative, I think, at the second turn?
Second turning point. First or second?
Second turn. And then if they survive at the end of the game in your opponent's drop zone, you get 2 points. If they're in your opponent's territory or like within 6 inches of your opponent's drop zone, you get 1 point.
Yeah, it's pretty much like courier, but a little bit more telegraphed. Which is totally
way more
fine.
Telegraphed.
Yeah, a lot more telegraphed. Which is totally fine if you like crush the flank.
Yeah, or if you just have a 9-inch move dash flying shrimp with super conceal that they're, you know, buried in immortals and just can't deal with. And like the reanimator shrimp has an enormous target on its head because if they can kill that, you know, that's usually my go-to. Then central control is, again, like, you can kind of just roll it up, but it plays to that game plan of just get my dudes in the middle or towards your side of the board. I have also, for elites, started doing Worthy of Study, which is Necron or Heretic Circle Faction TACOP 3, which is during turning point 1 or turning point 2, you designate two of your opponent's models, and they get to choose one, and that model becomes worthy of study. And this is a kind of hard to score tack up because you have to kill that model, and then it becomes a token. Like, you get like a little corpse that you play a token for its corpse. And then you have to have another model. You have to control that token and then have either your Prentech or Cryptech within 6 inches of that token as well to score it twice. But if you're playing into elites, you can put that on their far advanced melee beaters and say, hey, if you're going to charge that assault intercessor into me and like get him in the middle of my lines, I'm going to turn you into a token that I can just sit and score on. And if you can get that on an objective point, it just makes that easier for you. Or I played it into Harlequins this last weekend, and I put it on a Harlequin, and my opponent is just like, I'm going to run that Harlequin away. I'm like, great, I just took a clown out of the game so my opponent can deny me 2 TACOPs, and I'll take that flank. But yeah, otherwise, Unyielding Ancients. On Into the Dark, I will take Unearth Artifice, which is their second tech up, which is you place a token. It's a start a game reveal. You place a token more than 6 inches from your deployment zone. But that means you can walk a model 6 inches and be controlling it. And on Into the Dark, I'll just pop that token down and it's a 2 APL action or 2 AP action to bury up whatever fancy ancient Necron or Chaotech is there. And then you sit on it for one turn and then you just have to go sit on it at the end of the game, which is a perfect thing for one of your bugs to just zip around a couple corners to do. End of the game, and it's usually a pretty easy two victory points on Into the Dark, and it also kind of puts your pressure on your opponent because they're like, wait, you scored one of your tac ops already, like half of one of your tac ops already, and we haven't even started opening doors yet. This, so it kind of starts putting the heat on them to keep going, and kind of be aggressive into your Nightmare Shroud.
This leads me into one of the questions that I've had throughout the whole episode. And I've dabbled in Hyrotech a little bit, and I just got like the kit that came with Shadow Vault. So I've got a Technomancer, and like, he's the only Cryptek I have. It's, you know, it's kind of fun to noodle around with like newer player games, whatever. But I found that like, it's like the shrimps are such a utility outside of their purpose that I pretty much don't use them for their purposes very often. Like, I might get one revive and one extra APL, and then other than that, they have another purpose. And I'm wondering, for like a real Hyrotech circle player, do you have a similar outlook, or like, is your APL dude actually doing APL multiple times?
I usually have my APL, I usually have the accelerator pass out APL 2 or 3 times a game. And a lot of that, and part of being a good Hyrotech player, is keeping everything within your support net and making sure that you can get those. And fortunately, the shrimp are flexible enough that you can get them places. And since that APL action is free, you can usually position in a way that you're like, okay, turning point one, I'm going to move, I'm going to loot that point, you know, at worst, right? So I'm going like hardest case scenario, which is loot. I'm going to move there, I'm going to loot that, I'm going to pass an APL to my Despotech after he's activated. So my Despotech is going to go into turning point 3-2 with 3 APL. And then during turning point 2, I'll move again. I'll pop 2 APL on the Despotech like 2 or 3 times a game. If the Despotech has run off and just started ginsuing people or gets blasted by a plasma gun that I should have seen coming or something, I'll just pop it on another Immortal. And then turning point 2, I'll usually put, like I said, I usually put, what's that tech op that we talked about that I forgot the name of again?
The 2 APL,
No, the one where you have to run across the board.
Talk about escort operative.
Escort operative, yeah. Then I'll usually pop escort operative on them and start moving them. But I'm moving that, that accelerator drone in positions where I can pop out APL either before or after the move. And since it's a 6-inch visible bubble, you have a pretty good amount of wiggle room. So it's just 6 inches from whatever objective point you're moving to. And you also have fly. So you just go wherever you want with those things.
Is that a 0 APL action to hand it off?
I did get changed. It did get changed to 0 APL. Yes.
Yeah. So it's an action. So it's not like at the start of your activation you can hand it off. It's like, no, you can do a 0 APL action. Okay, that makes it way better.
Yeah, I mean, I've even had time where it's like, all right, I'm gonna move APL that guy and then dash into cover somewhere. But like, you had to go out somewhere a little risky. Maybe if I had my death mark kind of in deep or something. And the reanimator, I move to turning point 1 and turning point 2. My reanimator is definitely keeping in positions where I can hit reanimations more. That's its goal, because turning point 3 and 4, especially 4, like 4, the reanimator doesn't matter anymore. It is then just a tech piece. But even like turning point 3, maybe, but turning point 1 and 2, it is vital to keep your key pieces in line of that medic. You have to be able to get this extra actions to revive. And granted, you can make your game plan around, okay, my Apprentice is going there, my Despotech is going there, I got another Immortal here. I'm going to move my Reanimator into position to cover those three models and still be on a point.
Yeah, again, the 12-inch bubbles, or like the 12-inch diameter bubbles, means that as long as you're paying attention, you can generally keep your reanimation beam focused on the people or the Necrons that are out in the open. You know, obviously the Death Mark is going to go up, get a shot off maybe within, you know, in wherever position he is. The leader can take his 4APL, fly over into an aggressive position. And if your opponent decides to punish any of these pieces, they have to commit on turn one to having more engaged models, which means that if you can get them to do it early, you can shoot them back. And if you have a free reanimation, all the better, because that means that you're really not losing that much as far as taking a trade, as long as you win the initiative next turn and you don't have your guy explode. But, you know, with the way that reanimation works now, you always basically res in effectively a safe position if you lose a guy on turn one.
Yeah, I didn't realize that. So when I was originally figuring out Hero Tech, I thought it was, and so this is for people just figuring out the team, you always get to reanimate. Your opponent cannot block your reanimation tokens. I've come from some other games where you could position in a way that if you had a mechanic like that, your opponent could block it. So when I was first looking at reanimation, I thought, oh, if they're standing on my token, and I can't come back, which is not the case. It's just you have to move further out. So it took me a little while. Like, I think it was just last week that someone was like, no, you get to just place your model 3 inches further away. So I've been playing reanimation on hard mode this entire time.
I think the only way that your opponent could theoretically block you on a reanimation right now is if they had enough models set up in a constellation around a dead, like a reanimation token, where there is no spot for your operative to be placed and nowhere within 3 inches for you to be placed, then maybe there is an argument.
Into the dark.
Yeah, like it's possible, very unlikely, basically. Like it would require enough operatives in a constellation that would definitely be blastable for them to stand in a position where, you know, there's nowhere within, because it is within 3 inches of the reanimation token, but not within engagement range of the enemy operatives.
Yeah.
So it is maybe theoretically possible, but very, very difficult for a single operative to do. They would need to have probably like four operatives, I would expect, to
maybe
basically screen out a bubble.
Yeller Pox Hulk on one of the stupid freestanding Beta Decima.
Yeah, it's possible. Like, I won't say it's not possible. It is physically possible by the rules, and there is no rider in the reanimation rules like there are in Chaos Cults where you can always res. Though on Chaos Cults, you know, Alexa was on here forever ago, basically talking about how if you set up your mutation pop correctly, you can actually bubble up your own Chaos Cults, turn into a mutant, and because there's no legal place to put you, you actually pop over above a barricade. Because there is a rider in the Chaos Cult rules that basically says you must be placed. There is no rider here. There is
it's a can be, I think, isn't it? I'd have to look at it.
No, basically for Chaos Cults, you actually get to like move. Yeah. You get to push models around a little bit. Like you can ignore your own places and push yourself out. Whereas there's no rider for it on the higher tech circle. But for a single operative, basically impossible. For maybe three or four operatives, it might be possible. And then it would basically say that for that first bullet point, maybe it is possible to screen you out. It's just very hard. And if they do that, they are basically setting themselves up to get blasted. Because it's not like you don't have enough guns to kill four dudes standing around a corpse.
Mm-hmm. Well, and okay, so that's you can stand, you change orders and revive within 3 inches of your token. That's like not if you're blocked, it's just no matter what, right?
Yeah.
Well, you could physically set up enough models where there's nowhere for you to set up a new operative that is not within engagement range. So it is possible, just not with one operative.
Yeah, it's like at that point, at what cost?
Exactly. I'm saying that it is possible by the letter of the law. It for sure is possible, but it requires a lot of operatives and it requires a lot of commitment. So it's not like you wouldn't see it coming.
You know what it requires? It requires the greatest player at the second Paul Bunyark World Championship Invitational. We had a local player, Jack, run Max Grotz. Great skins.
Oh yes, of course. The All Gretchen Revolution. I suppose at Paul Bunyark, this is an acceptable line of argumentation.
It was the Knob, two Rocket Boys, and everything else was Gretchen.
Yes, that is the argument for it. I don't having it, it having talked to people. Well. It'll win a handful of games. If you don't take a bunch of Gretchen seriously, you will just get bogged down by a bunch of dorks and not enough melee steps.
Mm-hmm.
To free yourself off your two midboard points.
Yeah.
But it's not a good strategy, and I wouldn't suggest to anyone doing it. And I also don't think technically in the rules, I'm pretty sure the rules were not written to allow it, but it is just at the edge of English reading where people do it. I would not suggest people do it.
It wasn't pure Gretchen. They had three actual...
basically, the argument is for every boy, you can take two Gretchen, and you can only take 20 operatives on the battlefield anyways, because there's only 20 roster slots.
True, yeah.
So you fill up, I think, 16 Gretchen, and then everything else is models. Yeah. But, like, is it worth doing? Not really. It's just kind of a fun meme. Again, the ability to actually block out Hero Tech Circle reanimation res is possible, just very hard.
Yeah.
Or, three Gellerpox Hulks standing on your corpse, sure, but at that point there's three Gellerpox Holds kind of like noodling around doing nothing, so not the worst thing in the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that 3-inch revive that they gave us 2 data slates or ago, I think, was really big. Being able to basically get a free dash out with that team, because Hero Tech, unless you're paying CP, yeah, plus the order change, I started playing Hero Tech right after they gave the Apprentech or the Cryptech an extra ballistic skill. And I think that was it. So I've gone through all of these changes, and the having a guy come back with D3 wounds right where he was with the same engage token was just like worthless. It's like, oh, you're going to spend another... You literally just need to, like, pop me with the las gun and my faction ability that you had to pay a command point to use is gone. Every incremental change to Resurrection Protocols has been really, really nice for the team and really opened up their abilities. The last data slate, just in general, I've played Chromancer a few times. I wasn't a huge fan of the counter temporal nanomine because it was just, it's just like an unpleasant amount of control that you pop that down and your opponent just kind of deflates a little bit and you're like, okay, now we're not really playing a game for fun anymore, which is, what Kill Team ultimately is. I almost felt a lot of the times that when playing the Psychomancer, which is supposed to be like the trauma, literally has an ability with trauma in the name, but like counter temporal trauma mind would have been a better name for that one before the nerf. That thing was just oppressive. But it was really the chronometron turbo roller skates that I love on the Chronomancer. The turbo boosted Despotech is a monster.
Yeah, I don't remember if that ended up making one of the previous podcasts or not, but I remember one of the conversations I had with Shane was...
Yeah, it was on. That was actually what tuned me into it. It was like, wait, you can do what with the Despotech? I need to try my Chronomancer out.
Yeah, pretty bonkers. And that's like the main power piece within it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, and even without Nanomine now, just having a 4 up invuln save, 5 up feel no pain dude flying around 12 inch move dashing with a blast weapon is pretty dirty.
Yeah, Hero Tech definitely has all the tools and all the ability. Yeah. It really is just the limitation of your APL. And if you cannot plan where you need to put your operatives and your APL, you are going to struggle. Because as powerful as the team is, it is effectively a 16 AP or like a 18
it's
APL
18,
team.
It's 18 APL now, so it's in line with true elites.
It's in line with true elites, but it punches way harder or like way less hard in some aspects. Mm-hmm. And you have to be way more intentional about where you're going to be positioning.
Yeah.
So have you found, you said you had an 80% win rate with the Psychomancer. Where have you found the hardest games? And what is the matchup spread? Like what's easy, what's hard?
I actually find most of the other 8 to 10 model operative teams are pretty... pretty good matchups for Hero Tech. Anything with 8 wounds and a 4-up save is just absolute dog meat against Gauss weapons. When every one of your guns is a crack grenade, even if they're in cover, it's like a coin flip that they survive. Unless you completely botch the roll. And if you roll like the Death Mark and the Despotec with Gauss, just delete a dude every single shot. Because they're 2-up to hit, so unless you're rolling pretty cold, they can usually get a reroll. So unless you're rolling pretty cold, they're just rolling 4 hits, and it's like, all right, you're taking 8 wounds even if you save out 2. And then usually you can beat up those teams in melee. Horde teams, again, Psychomancer has some good options for like controlling the score line on that. So unless you're running into like control against them, you're doing okay. Or capture, unless you're running capture into them, you're doing okay. Intercessors, I'm kind of even on. Phobos, Jason, and I, we need to play again because last time our only game was with your Max Incursors on Beta Decima, and I like left my deployment zone and was vaporized. You can only resurrect so many dudes after getting just aced turning point one where you can't even see your opponent yet.
Jason's all incursor spam has been nerfed.
Yeah. I didn't laugh when I saw it out loud in front of Jason. I still think it's going to be perfectly fine. Beta Decima just has its own issues. Intercessors is fine. Phobos is a really interesting matchup because it's two really tricky teams that have like kind of level feel on punching, and it's entirely going to be depend. I think that one is like a true even. Like that one's going to depend on player skill.
And I feel like Omni's like. Infiltrator spam with Omni Scramble is like a nightmare for Hierotech Circle.
Yeah, if you can control when the Chronomancer when the Cryptech gets to go, it's a real bad day.
But I feel like it'll be like in like a tournament context, it'll be pretty easy to avoid because there's not a lot of Phobos players, and they're probably not going to be like top cut.
Now that you know, let's see. Elf teams are really interesting. Harlequins were way, way harder before they had to obey terrain rules. So their invuln save makes Gauss not great, but Tesla really messes them up a lot. Horde teams, I need to get a few more games in. I've played Pathfinders a couple times, and the shooting trading gets really interesting there. Because again, and this happens with Casterkin, like we have a local guy, Mike, who's a huge Casterkin guy. He's the only one who played Casterkin at Adepticon. And I think he went 4-3, if I remember correctly. So he does pretty well with them. And it has been like every time we've played here at Tech versus Casterkin, it's been an absolute massacre because they can trade piece for piece, but when your immortals come back and then kill another Casterkin, the peace trade falls out real bad. True horde teams, you really got to hit that control. You need to be threatening the blast alpha super hard, so they have to spread out. You need to be able to. I think that's probably one of like a really solid horde team is probably a huge challenge. But if you can get that blast off and kill like 3 or 4 dudes early. That makes a big difference too. So it's something that I'd be interested to see. We don't have anyone, like I said earlier, we don't have anyone like really tuning people up with Horde around here, so it's hard to say. We have a couple folks switching to AdMech, I think, though. I am interested to see Nemesis Claw because 6-inch shooting is kind of where Herotech wants to be for Relentless Onslaught anyway. So as soon as we can get to a point where we ignore their obscuring, we are ignoring their faction ability.
Yeah. And I think with like Nemesis Claw, they pretty much like it's just for their turn one approach. And then after that, you can't really like afford to be on conceal anymore.
Yeah. And like Gauss Blasters are going to give those things nightmares.
Yeah, they're going to eat them up.
But if they get into melee, it can get a double kill off. That's going to be a big problem. Heretic, I feel like don't, other than like, you know, some bad experiences with Nurgle Legionary, I feel like in general the team doesn't have something they look at as like a massive weakness right now.
Have you done any like Felgor games?
I actually don't hate Felgor.
According to Shane, Felgor is one of the better matchups just because they go in, they frenzy, and then you get up and you blow them up again. Mm-hmm. Or like they hit you once and then they go away. Because like they can't really kill you again in melee. And with the lethal five, if they come at you while frenzied, you have a non-zero chance of just like doinking them, taking four, and moving on. Because they have to approach you, you can actually shoot them pretty nicely on the way in.
Mm-hmm. I need
to play. It's my current understanding of how Shane receives that matchup.
The lethal five up is like is really brutal for them. And because I can have lethal five up on, if I want to, all of my primary combatants, like I could potentially just take five immortals with hyperphase blades, like four immortals in a tech, conjure trauma on their like leader or something that wants to support and get up, is really nice. Nightmare Shroud is awful for them because then even if they do frenzy and they charge you and you roll a crit, they can't roll a crit to hit you back anymore. They can't parry out and just beat you to death. They have to take that crit. So I think Felgor is fine to match up. I'd be interested. I haven't played against Scouts. I feel like Scouts wouldn't love the matchup, but it's hard to say because they do again have the opportunity for a good amount of conceal shooting and some good obscured shooting, and they have some really heavy guns.
Scouts are like a weirdly, they're kind of like living in the gatekeeper realm where like they're gonna like punch above their weight class, but I don't think they're gonna make it to like the upper levels. So it's like if you play against a really good scout player in an early round at a tournament, they could knock you out. But like the scouts themselves aren't really gonna like win anything. And then like once you get into like the second and fourth rounds and whatever, it's like scouts aren't really like a threat anymore.
Yeah, they live and die on their first turn, and because you're a team that lives and dies by their third and fourth turn, it's just not a great spot for the scouts to be. Like once they're out of their scouting tricks, they like kill one of your dudes, you get back up, and you just shoot back, and you're like, all right, that's cool.
Yeah.
We'll just play the later game.
Yeah, I think Heretic pretty well covered, though. I have run for equipment every once in a while. I'll take, like, the Tesla Weave. But yeah, usually it's just hyperphase blades. If I'm feeling cheeky, I'll take the Nano Scarab Swarm and usually botch the roll, even with two rerolls.
Fair enough.
Yeah, grenades that have no chemistry, I feel like with any team, is just, like, don't ever bother. It's like Phobos, well, don't bother with any grenades. You don't have any synergy with them.
Well, that's the problem is it's a 6-inch range. I have a Drat ploy that I use basically every turn after turning point one. That gives me reroll within 6. And you can use Demand on the Despotech to give a free command point reroll. And then I'll still roll up and be like, all right, I hit on 3s and roll like reroll into 2s again or something.
Yeah, it's like you get 3 hits and then they save 1 or 2. And it's like...
They have a cannon. They're snipers, I mean, so they auto retain too.
Yeah.
I mean, as far as like the expected value of Nano Scarab, really, it's just really not that great because it's effectively just a bolter with lethal.
Yeah.
So against a 7-wound model, you're probably not even likely to kill them unless you roll really, really hot, which is definitely not a guarantee.
Well, it's like even if you roll a really, really hot, they're going to be like, just hurt.
Yeah. Or it's like, oh no, you killed my one of my 14 guardsmen with. Like
3 equipment points and a big effort.
A 3 activation setup. That is the thing about Heretic is also, Heretic is like the ultimate catch 22 team. There's so many turns I turn in where I'm like, okay, I want my Apprentic to be there, but I need my Cryptic there first. And then before my Cryptic goes, my Despotech needs to be here. And so you have all these pieces that need to be in place kind of at the same time that can't be. So you're constantly sacrificing options to get into the positions you need to be, or putting models into positions that are risky, which again you reanimate so you can kind of kind of toss that a bit more. You can be a lot more aggressive with Heretic than you can with a true Leech team, because like once your Intercessor, your Phobos guy is gone, that's it. You're not getting another one. So Heretic is forgiving on like, oh, I lost a model, it can come back probably. But as far as like where your stuff has to be in relation to each other, it's very, very specific. And if you don't have your Despotech or your Apprentech in good positions when your Cryptech goes, you can lose options for Command, Demand, Arcane Conduit shots. One thing I actually like to do is run the Cryptech up early and then Apprentech later, so you can Arcane Conduit. You kind of give, like, it's a good way to give the Psychomancer sort of an Overwatch option or like a double tap option, is just have the Apprentech shoot through it later, which with the 3 APL makes a lot easier to do.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, the power there is that you... I mean, it's fine. Go ahead.
Space out a little bit. There's a lot to it. It's a fun team because you have like so many combo ups and so many crazy tricks. I feel like, other than the reanimation, I feel like nothing in the team at this point is really just like a really nasty gotcha. I mean, I understand how much of a feels bad it is to be like, oh, right, I set all this up, I plasma gunnered that thing, it's dead now, and next turning point it comes back to life, and if your plasma gunner doesn't activate first and kill it again, I'm going to kill your plasma gunner. The peace trading game into them is tipped on its head.
Yeah, the real thing is if you can manage, like for a higher tech player, your goal is to have exactly two pieces die each turn. And as long as it's a new two pieces every turn, you basically get 12 operatives that can do damage.
And even if it's like the ones that I most often have die and then die right again away are usually just my Mook Immortals, which fine.
Yep, they're there to score points, drag your opponent's attention, and do a little bit of chip damage.
Yeah, I mean, chip damage is often like half of an Intercessor.
Yeah. Yeah, you chip damage in the context of this team, right? Where you're everyone has a crack grenade.
Crack grenade gun is pretty nuts. They also can be like, depending on terrain layouts, they can have a hard time because of you have like supreme mobility with three operatives and then no mobility with another like four of them.
Yeah. I mean that's probably when you would switch in and out the Chronomancer or the Technomancer. For the matchups. So hopefully, next time you're on here, I mean, next time you're on here, you'll be able to use the Psychomancer and the Technomancer and the Chronomancer and have all three Cryptechs live in harmony.
I need to put the Technomancer. I feel like the Technomancer is a good play into newer players that haven't run into Heretic before, because it's heal more. But it's more of a lose less operative than a win harder operative. You can be a little more gutsy and get a little bit more of that. But you're not getting these like really mean like turbo roller skates. Hey, this guy just like showed up in your deployment zone and like killed your two most important models.
No, just your first most important model with your AP2 gun, right?
Yeah. Yeah, so I feel like the Technomancer might be a good pick against players that haven't run into the team very much. It makes the keeping them down harder. But it doesn't. But it really just like is Heretic harder without all like the really nasty tricks that the Chronomancer and the Technomancer have. And it's not there's not this giant blast threat that they have to work with. So I've been thinking about that with some of the newer players. So Jason is the main organizer of the Twin Cities community. He runs at Game Centers on Tuesdays. And last year when we kind of did like the store split, which is right when I was kind of jumping into the community, I started setting up a shop at one of the Dreamers Vault locations. There's like five of those, I think, or six of those in town. But so I actually have a like sub community that I started over at that Dreamers Vault, and yeah, it was just like a couple buddies I've known since high school and been wargaming with forever. that I tuned in, but we're up to like 8-10 players on average on Wednesdays now, which has been pretty cool to see. And so keeping that, like, because I know you guys are very like, how do you keep your community going? And I'm like, I'll show up on Tuesdays when I can. But Wednesdays are the night that I am pretty much always there unless I'm sick or, you know, family thing happens.
Yeah, Ted's another great example of, like, consistency is key. Like, you've been there all the time, and, like, you really have been, like... like a perfect seed of like creating a whole other additional community within, and like the people that show up to your events will show up to our tournaments and stuff, and like you really have like entirely started a whole new scene here. Plus like you started the new scene, you've been working on some maps and stuff, which is some cool stuff.
Yeah, I do a lot of tinkering, and like terrain layout is so important in this game, which is one of the things I love about it. And it's frustrating because, you know, you got to bring like 3 shipping containers worth of terrain with whenever you go to game night. But like figuring out like what is an ideal board in a way that's like interesting for both players and gives the defender a little bit of an advantage, like having a side of the board, because I know there's a lot of like, oh, try to make them equal. And the terrain theory of Kill Team is really interesting to me, because of how much of the game just revolves around that. And so I've been playing, especially with Beta Decima, I just sat down one afternoon, like on a Saturday, and just started tinkering with layouts. And one thing that I really try to do with my terrain layouts is make it look like it was a real thing. You know, with Octarius, you can usually position the walls in a way that it's like a balanced terrain setup, but also looks like a real slightly fallen apart orc workshop place, right? Usually that involves all of the inside corners kind of, like the vantage is all kind of pointing out away from each other for the cover. The oil pump thing is either in the middle of all of them to block line of sight across, or it's positioned weird so it's off to the side. I have a lot of respect for the TPT boards that are usually used. Like really greatly designed for tournament. They drive me crazy because they just don't look like anything that was ever real. Right. That's entirely a game board setup and not a world that you're playing on. And that's one thing that bothered me with Beta Decima's sets is all of those boards are game boards, but they're not lived in.
Yes, there's definitely a difference between a balanced game and an immersive game. And I think that most tournament players, when they're going for a competitive tournament, I think most people are expecting for there to be like a fair shake. So having everything feel natural has not been the primary goal. I think in narrative campaigns, when I've run those, it doesn't really matter. As long as it looks cool, people have fun.
Yeah.
So there's a little bit of a push and pull there. So you're saying that you've been trying to find tournament boards that feel a little bit more lived in when it comes to Beta Decima. What have you used? Have you just been using what's in the box, or have you been using the stuff that comes in with Kill Team Salvation? You know, how have you been doing that?
So the ones I was setting up was with the Salvation pieces, but since not everyone has those, and like sourcing those for a full tournament, if you're going to be running Beta Decima, is really difficult. But one thing that got me, and this was before the jump change was made, that I was really working on these, and before the visibility change. So I had that in mind, but like, who is designing these platforms just sitting out in the middle of nowhere with nothing to do? So having walkways that are interconnected is one thing that I looked at a lot. It improves the mobility, because even with jump tests not having to be not being a roll anymore, you can't fail them. You're still leaving, you know, 2 to 3 inch gaps in the potential movement of the operatives. So having the boards be interconnected so there are actually just walkways over the space is something I focused on a lot. The Ferrotonic Furnace on a couple of them is central located on one or two of the layouts I did. I actually have it more towards one side than the other. So if you're, you know, if you're given that attacker defender choice, you might be giving up the furnace if you take first attacker. And I think that's a really interesting play space to go with. And I'm coming into, I came in from Kill Team from Star Wars Armada, and that game had a bidding mechanic with its points that I didn't always love. But learning to play for second or first player was actually really important competitively in that game. And I think that's true of Kill Team as well. And I want to have maps that reward that.
A skill set that I think goes missed a lot. To be fair, once In the Dark came out, it made that, you know, first second play a little bit more obvious. So I think people started learning, you know, when to do that. But back in the old open days, going first or second on certain boards with whatever team you were doing definitely mattered a lot. So I do miss when people cared about that a little bit more. I think right now it's kind of only a medium skill because a lot of boards are kind of set to avoid having it be an issue.
Yeah. Which is a design space that's kind of lost. Sort of like those little triangles on the base of the data cards that have like the shield and the swords and stuff on them.
Those are for narrative. Those are like explicitly for narrative. Thank goodness those don't actually do anything. Because there was one small period of time when the novitiates were told that they actually got faith points based on those. And that has gone away. Because I don't think anybody wanted that.
Yeah, that's definitely kind of a tie over from the 2018 Kill Team. Yeah, so that's definitely something I just say to people that are like trying to make beta decima work. Don't use the GW sets. Poke around, just throw something together that actually looks like it would be like a working industrial installation where the walkways connect and they're interconnecting in different points. Kind of have it so that there's, you don't have to have a huge amount of advantage on one side, but you have some difference on each side. And different teams are going to like different sides of the board depending on what they're playing. The visibility changes made a big difference there, just as far as staying safe, but you still got to make sure that you got to have good cover for deployment, like in any board. As much as I play like the premier Alpha Strike team in Hero Tech, being able to set up so one player can't just like immediately blow the other off the board is really important to me. To make it more of a game, because like a couple of the games that I have played where I've like, oh, I'm against Blooded and they didn't see this big flying move going, or I'm playing against Chaos Skulls, I kill like 5 or 6 models in one blast, and like it's not fun to go into turning point like the fourth activation of turning point one with your opponent already just like, I'm losing this game.
Over to Kill Team from 40k because the Alpha Strike was gross and bad.
And Armada didn't have Alpha Strikes originally, and then they like right before the game kind of started, that game kind of died through COVID, more or less. But I know there's still some holdouts, but like they'd added like a super laser ship that could shoot your opponent in their deployment zone, which was not in the game otherwise. And it was like the absolute apocalypse. It wasn't, but a lot of people acted like it was. But so yeah, so good, like getting that Alpha Strike. But I think that's it's important, like in a game like Kill Team, that if you're going to have like that kind of distance and range that the terrain counters, and I think Kill Team actually did a great job in their design space of how like commands and obscuring and terrain works, as much as obscuring is everyone's like favorite pet peeve in Kill Team, I think that's all in a pretty solid space.
As much as everyone complains about it, the visibility rules do provide both an easy onboarding and plenty of space for people to get better at it without it being too crazy. But it does, there's definitely a learning curve, and that learning curve is not to be underestimated. I think oftentimes when I teach people the game, I just say obscuring is not necessary right now because it doesn't help you have any more fun, but it would be boring if there was no layer in between visibility and cover.
I've actually started getting in regular casual games now. I I put in like 8 or 9 learning games this year or something like that. And it, and I'll be like, there's this thing called obscuring, and I'm not teaching about it to you today because you're already absorbing a very complex game, and we don't need to hurt your brain anymore. There's enough steps. Like, if there's someone that I know is an experienced war gamer, I might throw it at them. But yeah, like, I feel like the most people I talk to when they're teaching a new player is like, what don't you do? Equipment, tac ops, obscuring. Everything else is usually fair game.
And like, as the captain of angles, which I've coined myself apparently. Yeah, I mean, obscuring is, it is like a fun mechanic. I'm a little bit torn on it because I'm like, it doesn't need to be as crazy as it is. But I absolutely have like fallen in love with abusing it terribly. And like, it could be toned down.
I think it's kind of in the same spot that Damage on the Stack was in Magic the Gathering for a long time, where there's this like very niche situation that is definitely in the rules, but it has unintended consequences. And we've learned what those unintended consequences are. And now we work around them and use them to our advantage. But it doesn't ever feel like you're telling your opponent the truth when they're first learning it. Like, it is by the book, it is by the rules, but it never feels like fair. So because obscuring is so binary as a mechanic, most players just kind of like, meh, whatever, like, my opponent says that you can't do it. And I've definitely heard from some people who have learned Kill Team that there's a lot of line of sight kind of like rule shenanigan or chicanery that's going on, which is not true. That's just how the rules work. But it definitely feels a little bit gross for a newer player who's just like, oh, I just want to like roll dice with friends. And then you bust out the laser line, you catch that you're in cover, and you're like, well, can't shoot me because my Space Marine's toe is behind this little nub of Octarius cover, which is, you know, it's them's the breaks, kids. But it never actually has to feel, it never actually feels like you're doing the right thing when your opponent is learning this for the first time in real time.
And honestly, even at like the absolute highest level of competitive, it's full blown fair game to just ruin somebody's day with the highest level of obscuring shenanigans. Because like, there's absolutely nobody that's safe from this. It's
There's like, this is just how the game works at a very, very high level. And unfortunately, it is, you know, that's just the breaks. This is the rules of the game. And unfortunately, that's just how the game works.
And every game has that. Like, you're not going to have a game that doesn't have, you know, like, you get your Leaf Blower 40k lists, you get your last first activations. Like, that's what Armada had. Armada didn't have a dice roll for initiative. You would not include stuff in your list to reduce your list's points value. And whoever had that better got to choose first or second. So you could choose, like, I'm going to be first player, and I'm going to be first player every turning point. And then I'm going to have... So imagine if Vetgar just got to be first player every turning point, no matter what they did, with the activation advantage they have.
Be pretty impressive.
And people just absolutely abused the daylights out of it. It was like, all right, I'm gonna set up so turning point or like turn two, I'm just gonna like annihilate half your fleet and there's nothing you can do about it. Every system has something like that. And that's the thing for that. The thing that I want actually in Kill Team most as far as all the visibility stuff is, could we please have like model volume or like visibility doesn't include like the tip of the flowing cape or like the top of your banner. I know it is devastatingly heartbreaking when your banner gets shot. You don't need to like have a whole heart attack and die about it, Mr. Chaos Marine Standard Bearer.
Or you know the physicality of your models is part of the game. Like, I know when Chaos Cults first came out, people were like, well, can I fit under this Octarius because it would make sense for me to? And we're like, no, you sure can't. Because your icon bear is just too tall. Right. And I am kind of two minds. I think it is kind of like silly, but it also does help players kind of get into that immersive space for your minis when you have to like, all right, can I actually see your model? And you're like, you sure can. You see like a little bit of cave swinging out the edge or like your dude's hand has spun off the edge. Like, I think it's kind of cute, but it is very cheesy in tournament play.
My flying tentacle squid man can't turn his staff sideways to fly under there.
Sure can.
Look, if you've got an icon, you've got to let it rip, you know? Like, you can't hide it from your own people, because they'll all fall apart and run away. You got to show it to the people, and you can't, like, hide under a building, you know? You got to just, like, inspire them. Stand out in the open.
Yeah, that Technomancer is on a big flying spider because he wants to be seen. He can't just hide wherever he wants.
Right? He's going to inspire the goons.
Yeah, I think those sorts of things, like, while I do understand where people want to come from like, I want it to be more, like, more competitive. I'm like, it's pretty competitive already, and sometimes those silly things can be fun. It's just silly.
That's my one pet peeve is, like, yeah, like, maybe if it's, like, yeah, there's other systems that do things a little differently. Olive, and the cover concealment system kind of covers for that, and I think that was actually really ingenious on the design part. Like, oh, if you don't want your guy with his big banner flapping all over the place getting shot, put him on conceal and heavy cover.
Yeah, you have extra levers in this game. Like, visibility is visibility, so obviously as a Psychomancer player, you get a lot of use out of just visibility. As a Pathfinder player, I got a lot of use out of just visibility. Yeah. But, you know, for your opponents, from your opponent's perspective, that does mean that there is counterplay. While it might be a little bit harder to do, at least on Octarius boards, it is way easier to get no visibility for a couple key models.
Yeah, it's not... what did Pathfinders come out on?
Chalnath.
Yeah, Chalnath is a visibility, like, super dream, but as a team with zero ability to ignore obscuring, it's also a horrible, horrible place for me.
Yeah, so we talked a little bit about the Midwest scene. Are there any... So it sounds like you two are out of different stores. Is there any other growth that you've seen, or what other big events are coming up? Do you have any of your own tournaments that are separate from Jason's tournaments coming up soon?
My last one was the second Paul Bunyork World Championship Invitational.
And that was a store invitational?
No, it was a store open tournament that Paul Bunyork doesn't know what the names mean, so he just gives him more names, and he forgot where the invitation list was.
All right, a goofy tournament where Gretchen were allowed.
It's just a casual tournament with a stupid oversized name.
Yeah. Okay, anything coming up in the near future?
The Dreamers Vaults in general are kind of trying to put on more kill team tournaments for us. So Dreamers Vault Champlin has one on the 29th, I believe, 27th of April here. And so we're kind of getting in a rotation that, like, quarterly at each of the Dreamers Vaults that are really interested in it are putting on events for us. And then Jason, are you running Renegade next up?
Actually, I'm not sure, because I have recently figured out, well, like, in the last week and a half, that I am actually available that weekend. maybe. It's not, like, 100%, but it looks decent. So, I might just, like, swoop in and TO it, because that's what I do a lot. We'll see.
Okay. Yeah, because that's in late May?
Yeah, it's like May 18th and 19th. I'm always in, like, the planning chats and stuff like that. And even the stuff that I'm not sure I can run, I've enlisted people to help out. So Will has helped out with a lot of the planning stuff. Like, if I'm just going to ghost mode for being super busy. And Lee's jumped in for a lot of the narrative stuff, which is super sick.
Yeah, those guys are having a lot of fun with their narrative. I've actually... The Poorhammer cast has their, like, Warhammer 40k horde mode, and I've been definitely thinking of, like, a kill team horde mode, because I think that'd be super fun to be like, all right, we gotta go, like, save democracy by blowing up the Tyranid spawning points, and just have, like, a map where there's a bunch of gaunts that keep coming out. Hive Fleet, I haven't talked about this, but when I'm doing, you know, my 85 demo games a year, I run Hive Fleet with just a bunch of gaunts and a couple warriors. Because you're like, all right, here's your new player, here's your intercessors, and here are a bunch of bugs that if you look at in any way, they're just going to immediately die. So, you know, like, nothing feels quite as good as the new player as just being like, oh, I'm going to get my spaceman, my Jimmy Space's specialist space boys, and I'm just going to start absolutely annihilating these dinosaur bugs from outer space.
Yeah, that makes sense. Sounds like a fun time for all involved.
Yeah.
You know, for my part, we'll have the Atlantic City Open coming up on June 16, 17, and I'll be running that one. We'll have the WTC terrain and some custom playmats, courtesy of FLG. Oh, June 14 to 16. So if anybody wants to come to that and have a good time in Atlantic City, you know, get some gambling on, get some games in, we'll have a silver golden ticket, you know, make sure you can go to Worlds.
So actually, on that note, with the WTC terrain, is that previewed? Do we have, like, a link to that to show it off?
We can't preview that, but we will have a product review in the near future on our YouTube channel.
It's pretty sick. Honestly, the review is going to be really good. Spoiler alert.
Yeah, and we'll have our own custom copy of Just Another Kill Team Podcast WTC style terrain with our logos on it and everything. So maybe we'll give those out to players, or maybe an enterprising Patreon listener will be able to get that set after we do the review.
Need to get on the Patreon, apparently.
Speaking of which,
all right,
all
Ted,
y'all listeners should get on the Patreon and the Discord and should leave 5-star reviews on whatever platform you're listening on.
Especially YouTube, if you're on our YouTube.
Yes. Here's for the YouTube reviews. Like, subscribe, click the bell. That's what YouTubers say.
Ted, thank you for coming on, talking about the last prong of the higher tech circle that people do not talk about, the Psychomancer.
Yeah, it was a good time. I'm always happy to sit and wax philosophical about, you know, traumatizing my opponents.
For fun and profit, of course.
For fun and profit. So...